The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I want to welcome you to the land of equanimity, the time of equanimity, that this is the topic for this week's five talks. And in particular, it's the equanimity brahmavihara. It's a form of love which is characterized by upekkha, which is the Pali word for equanimity. And it is maybe counterintuitive for many people to think of love as being synonymous or connected to equanimity, because love seems to be something that's more proactive, engaged, going towards people, doing something, being expressed, many things. But in fact, I think it's not too difficult to analyze love the way that it's often practiced and in the world around us, is that it's often mixed up with other attitudes and needs and desires. That sometimes love is mixed up with what we need. If we need company, we need security, we need, sometimes people feel like they need admiration. Sometimes love is mixed up with fear, and love is mixed up with lust. Sometimes it's mixed up with power, and sometimes it's mixed up with status and all kinds of things that comes along with love. And sometimes it's very hard to see the difference between some of these other elements that come along with love and love itself. I like to think of the practice of mindfulness as well as the practices of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity as being practices that purify love, that simplify it like you would simplify gold down to its beautiful essence. Take out the dross, take out the impurities that are there. So that as we simplify our love or clarify the love so it's not mixed up with these other needs and other things going on, it becomes more and more a wonderful treasure, a wonderful jewel inside of us that is a source of nourishment, support. And so to purify our love, to clarify our love. And so, for example, that they, for loving kindness, what gets purified from is any form of ill will. And any form of love that has to do with our self-centeredness, self-preoccupation, what's in it for me. As we practice or connect to compassion, compassion is freed certainly from any tendency for cruelty, to harm people, and it's also purified from any sense of distress, any sense of dismay, horror that might be there, that sometimes is confused with it. Appreciative joy gets purified of envy and jealousy. Sometimes that's a very strong motivator for insisting on love or holding on to love or protecting our love with someone else when there's jealousy and envy going on. And also, it's also purified from any kind of self-centered focus on oneself around feeling discontented, feeling giddy or feeling like, you know, that I'm the one who's now enjoying or delighting in the light of someone else. And so it's kind of a vicarious way of living where the focus is really on oneself rather than just being open to the joy of others. And so equanimity also is a purification. It's a purification from they say, from two things, from repulsion and pursuing. Sometimes it's translated as this word is attraction, sometimes as greed. But the word, the Pali word, has the connotation of pursuing, following after something. And so love that is neither pursuing nor has any kind of repulsion towards anything as a result of it or part of it. And so part of the way, one way to appreciate this quality of equanimity is that is in fact not so much to try to understand it directly, but to understand its alternatives. That the mind that doesn't have centered in this restful, easeful place of equanimity is a mind that is either for or against things in some kind of way that has qualities of pursuing or of repulsing or pushing away in a way that's not so healthy, that's not really a place of freedom. And so to begin discerning and noticing the small ways or the big ways which we're pursuing with love, wanting and getting. And some of us who maybe, especially when we were younger, maybe teenagers, the drive to pursue can be quite strong. And so to find equanimity, to find a place where love is not pursuing, is not repulsing anything, pushing anything away, but is able to stay open and clear. And in that openness and clarity, the purity of equanimity, that the love can radiate and shine quite broadly. So the purification of love is the task here. And it's closely connected to freedom. That love, these different forms of love, are freeing. And freedom is a means for loving. It's an opening to loving. And there's a wonderful reciprocal mutuality between the greater and greater degrees of freedom that the practice brings and our greater and love. And the greater love we have supports the freedom we have. The Buddhist Theravada tradition provides an analogy for these four kinds of love. And it has to do with parenting, a certain, you know, maybe see it as maybe ideal parent situation, is that if parents have four children, one who is recently born, and everything's healthy with a kid, and there's a enthusiasm and happiness and kind of lots of loving kindness, lots of well-wishing and goodwill for their future and delight, and it's very simple and clear. And just all around kind of lots of delightful goodwill and loving kindness. And then there is compassion as that child grows up, or one of the children maybe has an illness, and so the second child has an illness or has some disadvantage, that and the parents feel a lot of care and compassion and support that child in a different kind of way than others because of the sickness they have. And so there's kind of compassion. Someone else is in the flush of youth and life is just opening up for them brilliantly and wonderfully. And there's just a lot of joy and appreciation that things are working out so well and that the world is opening up for them and the opportunities are there. And then the fourth one is well established in their life. They're maybe in their 40s or something and well established in career and family or activities, whatever their life is going to be about, it's well established and it's going along just fine. And the parents don't have to think about them so much, not to be concerned with their welfare. And so there's a kind of equanimity towards that child. So this idea of whether this is a kind of a good analogy or not is not exactly the point here. We have to kind of shape these analogies for ourselves. But the idea being that it's association with kind of ideal parental love. And a parental love is generally not, doesn't have the complexities that romantic love have, for example. It can have its own complexities, but the idea is maybe it's easier with parental love to maybe feel a kind of a simplicity and purity there. And sometimes parental love is not about the parent. This is especially true when I think for many parents, when the baby is just born, that it's just so directed towards the baby that there's a kind of, sometimes a self-forgetting that goes on for the parents, because it's just caring for the babies, everything we need. So this ability to love without it being self-preoccupied love, without it being for me, myself, and mine, what's in it for me, and what I need, and what I have to get. There's nothing wrong with having needs and appropriate needs. Nothing wrong with pursuing what we need to be safe and happy and content. But it's useful to separate that from our capacity for love, so that our capacity to love can be simple, pure, just a wonderful opening and clarity. And one of the ways that I've experienced this in my life, the kind of the door to really appreciate this in a deep way, was or is through meditation. That through my first years, 10 years of meditation practice, where I'd had a lot of suffering and sat with a lot of suffering, unexpectedly it opened to a lot of compassion. And I learned to appreciate this beautiful capacity for just compassion without any need, compassion without any being for or against, even though there's a movement towards, certainly a movement toward help and to do things, but the movement towards supporting others or helping or caring for others can be done without this kind of self-centered being for or against anything. And then my next years of practice, especially when I practice Vipassana, I discover this wonderful capacity of goodwill and of friendliness, of kindness, and also the simplicity of it and the purity of it, and without it needing to receive anything in return. And then sympathetic joy. A lot of that I've really come to appreciate a lot in my time as a teacher. Just feeling so much appreciation, so much delight in other people and other practitioners, and learning there also a way in which that coming out of meditation, that delight and joy can be so simple and so without any needs or needing to do anything really, just a delight and joy. And then equanimity. And the love of equanimity has a lot also to do with meditation and the way in which I've discovered freedom in meditation, freedom from attachments and clinging, and just kind of feeling sometimes this real tender warmth and care and kindness that extends to people who I don't really like or have trouble with or disturbed by what they do. And to have this ability to have love and equanimity to suffer so widely, my love and equanimity to spread out in such a clean way is also one of the great treasures. So so this topic for this week is equanimity, and it's one of the great important topics. It has a lot to do, more than the others maybe, with wisdom. And we'll see that wisdom comes into play and how the practice really comes to play and to really cultivate and develop this equanimity factor, and how it is also leads to freedom. So that's the topic for the week, and we'll end it on Friday with the new year, and on the 1st. And for those of you who are up and early enough on the 1st, we'll begin the year with an evocation of this quality of equanimity. And who knows, maybe it'll be a great resource for 2021. So thank you so much, and look forward to tomorrow.